Your dad was John McCain.
Yes. My dad was a huge music fan. I'm going to tell you right now, my dad loved Willie Nelson. And people are like, you can't say you liked Willie Nelson because he dodged his taxes, blah, blah, blah. Well, he loved Willie Nelson. He did.
Everybody thinks they can do it. How can I become a professional wrestler? You really can't.
I pulled out the gun and I shot two times.
We have a complicated family. We were all raised to argue with each other with intensity, with passion, but also to love each other.
This is WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome to WTMJ Conversations. I'm your host, Libby Collins. Sexual abuse in the Catholic Church has long been a topic of conversation. People wonder, if the Pope knew exactly how survivors feel, would he react? Joining us today is Sarah Larson. She's the founder and executive director of Awake, a Milwaukee-based organization representing survivors of clergy abuse throughout the United States. And she was recently in a position to get some letters from survivors to Pope Leo. We'll tell you that story in just a few minutes. I want to find out a little bit about your background. Now, you grew up as a Catholic?
Yes, I've been Catholic my whole life. I was raised going to Sunday school, playing in the church choir. And so I've been Catholic throughout my entire life. I studied theology at Marquette University. And right after that, I went towards working in a parish. So it's been my background and my home.
What drew you to studying theology?
I've always loved to learn and to think about things in an intellectual way. And I had never gone to Catholic school. I went to public school my whole life. And there was something when I took my first theology class at Marquette, and I just fell in love with the idea that you could talk about faith and God and the Bible in an intelligent, thoughtful way and really dive into those things. And so I jumped all in on learning theology and really trying to grow in my faith during that time at Marquette.
When you studied theology, what was your intent?
Well, I wasn't really sure. I think that when I first started studying theology, I wasn't thinking of a career path. I was just thinking I loved learning about it. But eventually, I really had this desire to serve in the church, to do ministry in the Catholic Church. So I was volunteering for various student organizations that did Catholic ministry at Marquette. And I was also at the same time, I was a newlywed. I got married while I was in college and had my first child right after I graduated. So I was also thinking not only about career, but also about raising my family. And so I took a fair bit of time when my kids were little home with my kids before I really moved into a career in ministry.
I want to give a little background here, and if you could share this with us, as far as the sexual abuse crisis within the church. I think a lot of people first began to hear about it. It was maybe in the early to mid-80s.
Right. There was a lot of attention for a short period of time in the mid-80s, and there were questions, news stories about abuse, some conversation at the level of the church institution. But unfortunately, I think that conversation faded pretty quickly without really the significant changes being made at the institutional level. And so it really wasn't until 2002, which was the Boston Spotlight investigation that many people are familiar with, where abuse in the church was headline news for weeks at a time. That really was the turning point in terms of public awareness of the issue of sexual abuse in the church and the church making some serious efforts to respond.
You were growing up in the 80s. So when was it when you personally first became aware that there had been an issue of sexual abuse within the church?
It definitely wasn't part of my awareness as a child or even as I was studying theology, as I was a young adult, very involved in the church. I'm sure I had heard about the issue of abuse in the church. But I think that I believed a narrative that's really common, I think, among many Catholics, which is kind of this sense that, yes, abuse in the church happened. It was a long time ago. And when we found out about it, we realized how terrible it was. And then we as the church all came together and fixed it. And now we don't have to worry about it anymore. I don't think I would have ever said that out loud, but I think that was kind of the understanding in the back of my mind, at least subconsciously. And so for me, it really wasn't until the summer of 2018 that I really started paying attention to this issue. And that was the summer of the Pennsylvania grand jury report, as well as the revelations about former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick. And abuse was in the news again in a big way, especially in the United States, but even beyond that. And for whatever reason, that was the moment that I started paying attention. And I feel like those news stories, as someone who was a practicing Catholic, deeply invested in the church, and if you've ever known anyone who works in the church, people work long hours, really hard, put their whole heart into it for not a lot of money. And as someone who is so deeply invested in the church, this realization that there was still a problem really hit me like a ton of bricks.
Now, before that, though, you had been on parish councils and working mm-hmm. in the church for quite a few years before 2018.
Correct.
Did anybody ever talk about it at the time? I mean, informally, would there be conversation about things?
I don't remember it being talked about, except for I worked in child and family ministry. And so I was very aware of the safety protocols that had been put in place. You know, I ran a very large vacation Bible school, and every volunteer had to go through a training class, background check, all of those things. I was aware that there were these protocols in place, and I think I vaguely understood why they needed to be there. And we certainly were very careful and intentional about following those rules. But I don't personally feel like I ever really grappled with the reality of what had happened and why we needed to, you know, have all these policies in place.
During those years, and you were working on a parish level, I believe there would have been at least a couple of incidents where maybe priests had been removed from their ministry. So you must have heard about it concurrently with that.
You know, what's interesting is you're absolutely right. There were certainly things in the news. There were certainly, I don't know how I could have missed it, but I honestly don't remember thinking about it in any kind of deep way. And unfortunately, I think that speaks a little bit to being in a bit of a Catholic bubble that sometimes isn't so willing to talk about these hard things.
It's interesting you call it a Catholic bubble.
Mm.
What do you mean by that?
Well, there can be a temptation, I think, for those of us who are very invested in the church and also just in being disciples of Jesus. Especially, I worked in the church. Most of my friends were fellow Catholics who were very involved in the church. And so in some ways, I think that you can get into a mentality where you don't want to hear anything hard about the church because you are so invested in that church on a professional level, but even more than that, on a personal and emotional and a spiritual level. And so there can be a little bit of trying to avoid the hard things, or at least there was sometimes for me, I think.
Did you feel protective of the church and the clerics who were working?
Yeah, you know what? I think because I was so deeply invested in the church, I think I did have a sense of protectiveness about us as a community. And I would include everyone in that, Catholics in the pews, my fellow staff members, my friends, the clergy, the bishops. I thought of all of that as us. And it can be very tempting, I think, when you're part of a us, to do an us and them thing in your head where you get a little protective of your in-group and aren't so willing to ask the hard questions about what's happening in the community that you're invested in.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
God was calling me to do something. I eventually realized I wouldn't be able to do that something while still employed by the Catholic Church.
Sarah Larson, the executive director and founder of Awake, reveals her own personal revelation.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. We're talking with Sarah Larson. She is the executive director and founder of Awake. When 2018, when again the sexual abuse within the church story hit the spotlight with the report that you referred to and the revelations about Cardinal McCarrick, what exactly did you experience and say, I'm going to have to step up and do something?
Yeah, it was a very intense time for me because I went from being in a place where I had never really grappled with the shadow side of the church that I loved and was so committed to. And those news stories, again, the Pennsylvania grand jury report, I read a lot of that report. And then I was following the news about Theodore McCarrick. And that in particular, the realization that there were still people in power, in authority, in the church who were protecting an abuser. For me, that felt like a deeply personal betrayal, because I love this church so much. I had defended it and I believed we were all in this together and I had trusted the bishops. And to know that there are at least some people still in authority who had known that someone was abusing people and had done nothing and had covered it up. Again, it felt like I was being betrayed.
Did the cover-up part bother you more than anything else?
Yes, I think so. Obviously, the abuse itself is horrible. And the more and more that I spend time with and accompany abuse survivors, the more I understand the depth of that pain, but also the reality that not just the abuser themselves, but so many people in their orbit protected them and had not done what I was personally really committed to, the call of Jesus to be with the hurting and marginalized and those in most need of protection and support. And to know that there were people, many people, it seemed to me, that were not similarly committed to the thing I thought we all shared. That, I think, was what really shook me. Because again, I knew that abuse had happened, but the realization that there were still problems, there were still people who were covering up, that shook me in a very deep way.
During the years that you had worked for the church, was there ever any indication, anything, especially after you became aware that this had been going on, that you had seen or witnessed or experienced that made you sort of question what was going on then?
For a lot of people, they do have experiences where they look back and they see that was problematic, or there are some things that you see in new ways when you have more awareness. I will say for me, I truly had entirely positive experiences of the church. And there is nothing, as I've combed through my memory, even in a very active Catholic life for many years, as far as I know, I have not personally been in contact with a priest who turned out to be abusive, which I think is actually unusual. I think many Catholics, when they look through lists of names, they realize that they have been in contact in some way with someone who turned out to be a predator. That wasn't my experience. It was really this sense that maybe I had had this really beautiful experience of the church for 30-something years, and that so many other people had a very different experience, and their experiences were real, and I needed to grapple with that.
So in 2018, when you said, all right, I feel a calling for me to be involved in this and to help survivors, what exactly was the plan? What did you decide to do? Because I'm sure that if you're starting just from knowing very little and saying, but I think I need to do something, that had to be a bit of a challenge.
Yes. And honestly, I had no plan. I was working in the parish. We did a few things on a parish level, listening sessions, things like that, that felt important and valuable to me because a lot of Catholics in that time were really thinking about this and wrestling with this. So we did some things on that level at the parish, but I also spent so much of the fall of 2018 down this rabbit hole of internet research and reading old news, current news, stories of survivors, and crying and praying and trying to understand what I should do next. And I really didn't have a clear path, except for I knew that God was calling me to do something. I eventually realized I wouldn't be able to do that something while still employed by the Catholic Church because I knew I needed to have that independence to be able to speak the truth, whatever that was, to be able to go wherever I was feeling called and not be worried about my employment or about how it might reflect on the parish I was representing. So I ended up resigning my job in the parish. I was very fortunate to have a very supportive husband who has been with me on this whole journey. And I told him, I'm going to have to quit my job. And he, God bless him, said, okay, I support you. But there was no plan.
Well, you obviously had a lot of friends and people you had worked with within the church structure. What was their reaction when you told them that I'm leaving the employment of the church to go off and work on this on my own?
Most people actually were really supportive. I think a lot of Catholics, at least a lot of the Catholics that I was in touch with, were very aware of this issue in the church in a new way, especially in 2018, 2019. People were talking about it, wondering what they could do. And so a lot of the Catholics I knew were very supportive and interested in what I was going to do. And I know there were certainly some who didn't want to talk about it. Maybe we're still in a mental place where they weren't ready to wrestle with this, but I didn't receive really negative reactions from people.
Nobody said to you, don't go there.
No one said that to me. There may have been people who thought it, but nobody said that to me. I did receive actually a lot of support. And what I first started doing when I didn't really know what this path would be, I've always liked to write. and I was doing a lot of research and also personal reflection. And so I just started writing a little blog and sharing it with my friends and fellow Catholics. And there started to be a small group of people who were really responding to what I was saying, both my personal reflections about my journey to better understanding this and what I was feeling called to do, and also a little bit of information sharing about what I was learning. So there were started to be quite a few people following that blog, and that became this little community of support of fellow Catholics in the Milwaukee area who were similarly wrestling in the same way I was.
When did you first start hearing from survivors?
So the first things that I did that brought me into contact with survivor stories and voices were the really public stories that are in the media. And I dove really deep into everything I could find there. Then there was a few events in the Milwaukee area at that time that brought me into contact with some survivors who were very courageous in speaking about their stories. And then similarly, when I started writing the blog, I would occasionally hear from survivors who were interested in what I was saying, most often simply like, thank you for talking about this and writing about this. So that was the beginning. But I will say, at the very beginning of what became Awake, we were mostly just ordinary Catholics who hadn't necessarily been personally touched by this issue that we ourselves or a family member were abused, but just people who cared about it. It was really a more slow growth over time to being in contact with more survivors themselves.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
There are people that are in our community who have left the church long ago, have no interest in returning to it, and some who have, you know, a lot of anger, understandably, towards the church.
Sarah Larson, the executive director and founder of Awake, talks about whether survivors leave the church.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
I'm your host, Libby Collins. Let's return to our conversation with Sarah Larson, the executive director and founder of Awake. What was it like for you the first time you sat down face to face with a survivor who shared their story?
The first time I listened directly to a survivor's story, it shook me up. It was really hard for me to take in. I think I was having a very gradual journey of understanding the depth of the problem, not only the abuse itself, but the way the church has responded. And it definitely shakes something inside of you. And for me, it led me to a lot of prayer and reflection about what it meant for me to see my church in a new light. And I also was not someone who had a particular awareness of the societal issue of sexual abuse. And that's also not something that has personally touched my life. And so grappling with what the reality of sexual abuse really is, and then to amplify that by putting it in the religious institution that I'm so committed to, it shook something pretty deeply in me.
What did you decide then? As you started hearing more and more personal stories from these survivors, what was it you wanted to do? What did you want to accomplish?
Well, at the very beginning, we, the small group of people who started gathering in my living room in March of 2019, we were sitting around talking, and honestly, we didn't really know what we could or should do, just that we had to do something, that it was not okay with us to simply be passively learning about these stories and expecting someone in the church to fix it, to respond better to survivors, to work for the needed changes, that we were not content to just expect someone else to deal with this. We didn't really know what was even possible for this little group of lay Catholics with no power and no money and minimal experience and understanding of this. Like, what could we even do? So we knew right away that what we needed to do first was listen and learn. And so I'm really grateful for the wisdom that we had at that time to say, actually, we don't know everything and we need to learn first.
Up to that point, particularly here in Milwaukee, there had been a lot of people that were very outspoken and almost in some ways antagonistic when they would have various demonstrations or when they would become involved in things. Was that your intent? Did you want this to be aggressive or did you want to work quietly within the church?
We did have a sense that there was a need for another voice in the conversation. We noticed that, for example, when there were news stories, which there were quite a lot of in that 2018-2019 time, including here in Milwaukee, that when this came up in the news, there was often two people interviewed. And one would be a representative of the Archdiocese offering the statement on behalf of the institution. And then there would be a challenging voice from a survivor speaking what I would say are some, you know, hard truths in response. And so those were the only two voices in the conversation. And we did have a sense that there was something missing there, that there were actually a lot of ordinary Catholics who both wanted to speak truth, to learn and understand and accept the truth of what had happened, what was happening, to call for what needed to be changed, and also to do that as people of faith, as people of hope, and in a spirit of a real desire for transformation inside the church and coming from outside. And so we did have a sense that there was something missing in the conversation. We wanted to be part of that.
And because of that desire, did you decide to work closer with the church, with the survivors, or did you still want that independence?
We knew that we wanted to be independent enough that survivors who had been very wounded by the church could feel that they could trust us. Because the reality is that many survivors just don't trust the church institution. They don't trust the bishops or people who work for a diocese. And whether or not an individual in those institutions is trying to do good, the reality is there's just been so much broken trust that we wanted to be independent in a way that would both allow us to feel free to speak hard truths and stand what we call at the prophetic margin on the edge. But also, we never had a sense that what we were doing was somehow against the church or opposed to the church, because I and really our community within Awake have an understanding that the church is more than just the bishops, priests, buildings, parishes, that really actually Catholic theology says that we, the church, are the body of Christ, and each individual is part of that and has this responsibility. And so we never thought of what we were doing as somehow opposed to the church. We saw it as us living out what it means to be church in the world in a different way that was needed and important.
So did you hear from priests that you're doing a good thing here?
I think it was mixed. We definitely did hear from many ordinary Catholics, priests, people who work at the Archdiocese that were very supportive. And I would also say there were some who didn't really understand what we were trying to do and why, and maybe were a little worried that we were actually really just opposed to the church and somehow wanted to hurt the church. And so I would say it was pretty mixed.
So how do you walk that fine line, especially when there are those within the church that are looking at you suspiciously, and yet at the same time, you love your religion, you love the church, you want to work to better the church. How do you walk that line where you're talking about something that is very painful, that has not necessarily been handled in the best way by the actual formal church, yet at the same time, you still want to be part of that formal church?
That is something that honestly is, I feel like, that line that I'm still always trying to figure out in my own life. And there are many people within Awake who are trying to do that same thing. I think for me, what has been absolutely essential is that I have always understood that being Catholic first and foremost meant being a person who was committed to loving and following Jesus, and that the church is more than just an institution, and that when I say I am Catholic, I'm not primarily saying I am in agreement with everything every leader in the church says or does, but I am a person who is seeking to follow Jesus to be connected to the sacramental life of the church.
Do most of the survivors that you talk with still want to be part of the church, or have they just said, I just can't do this anymore?
It is a huge mix for us. I think there can be a public perception because of the voices that have been most represented in the media that most survivors leave the church and want nothing to do with it anymore. And we certainly talk to people that feel that way. And there are people that are in our community who have left the church long ago, have no interest in returning to it, and some who have, you know, a lot of anger, understandably, towards the church. And we also have people who are very committed Catholics, maybe working for the church, going to Mass every Sunday, very involved. And then there's a lot of gray area in between. And that's something I've learned more and more, that it is not just, oh, you're either in or you're out. You're either Catholic or you're not. You know, a lot of people who have these painful experiences in the church wrestle with what that means. They might want to go to mass but be triggered by the sight of a priest in a collar, or they might have times when the stories in the news have raised so much sadness or anger within them that they just can't, and yet they might also still feel drawn to the church, might still identify as Catholic, might still look for opportunities to reconnect. So it's really a mix of people, and I think that has been one of the gifts of building this community of survivors, is actually all of us learning to respect each person's individual journey and to recognize that what is right for one is not necessarily right for the other. And Awake is really trying to be a space where all those people can come together.
Still ahead on WTMJ Conversations.
I was going to Rome in less than a month. Was there any way that I could get letters from survivors to Pope Leo?
Sarah Larson, the founder and executive director of Awake, talks about reaching out to Pope Leo.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
And I'm Libby Collins. Our guest today is Sarah Larson. She's the executive director and founder of Awake. You have done something that I don't think most of these groups have done. You decided to take advantage of the fact that we have a new pope, and he's American, actually he's from Chicago, and you decided to reach out directly to him. Tell us exactly what happened.
Well, when the new pope was elected, a small group of leaders within Awake just had a conversation about what should be our response as an organization. What could or should we do, if anything, to the fact that there was a new pope? And someone in that conversation raised the idea that we could collect letters from the survivors in our community and send them to the pope. And that really resonated with everyone in that gathering, because so much of what Awake does is really about lifting up the voices of survivors, helping people, especially ordinary Catholics and church leaders, all the way up to the Pope, hear these stories, because we really believe that that is how minds and hearts are changed, is by recognizing the human beings behind these statistics. So I was heading to Rome for a conference, and I was speaking at the International Safeguarding Conference in Rome, which was a big deal for me and for Awake. It was a great opportunity. Well, we had this conversation and realized I was going to Rome in less than a month. Was there any way that I could get letters from survivors to Pope Leo? So we had kind of a quick timeline on how we could do this. And we started reaching out to survivors in our community and said, would you be interested in writing a letter to Pope Leo? And we were amazed at the response.
Well, without revealing identities, but what sort of things did they want the Pope to know?
We had 37 survivors write, and they had a huge mix of perspectives, which is exactly what we expected. Some people wanted to really tell him how deeply they had been failed by the church and really demand that he make changes. There were some people who wanted to tell him their story and just have a sense that he had heard. Some people wanted to make recommendations for changes to canon law or an action that he could take as the Pope. I think the biggest thing is that people wanted to be heard and to feel like their voices and their stories matter. And that's one thing I've learned from walking with survivors over these years, is that so many people want something good to come out of this horrible experience. And one of the ways that can happen is by them sharing their voice, sharing their story, sharing the wisdom that they've learned and having it received by someone else. I was astonished at the number of people who wanted to write, both the people that are practicing Catholics and those who are not at all and maybe have no interaction with the church in any way. The project resonated with them, and I think there was a little bit of a sense of hope that maybe we could actually get him to hear us.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
I received a letter from the bishop who said, I have delivered these letters to the Pope.
Sarah Larson, founder and executive director of Awake, talks about the response she received from Pope Leo.
You're listening to WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back to our conversation with Sarah Larson, the founder and executive director of Awake. I'm your host, Libby Collins. So here you are in Rome with your 37 letters, Sarah. How did you get those into the Vatican?
Well, I'm very fortunate that I've built some relationships with people at the Pontifical Commission for the Protection of Minors, which is the body of people that advises the Pope. It was established by Pope Francis, that advises the Pope on matters related to abuse. And so I had someone that I had met with several times from the Pontifical Commission who was also going to be at the conference I was speaking at. And I asked her, if I get these to you. Is there any way you can get them to the Pope? And she said she would try. So I met up with her. I went to a meeting at the Pontifical Commission. I delivered these books of letters. We had bound them all together and written a cover letter from us. And I handed them off to her and really just said a little prayer that maybe they would make their way to the Pope. She said she couldn't make any promises. I didn't know exactly what was going to happen, but we had told the letter writers that we didn't know if we could get them to the Pope, but that we would try. So I left Rome hoping, but not really sure what would happen.
So what happened?
About a month after I got home, I received a letter from the bishop, who is the head of the Pontifical Commission, who said, I wanted to let you know I have delivered these letters to the Pope. And I was ecstatic. I didn't know for sure that that would happen. And he said he had personally delivered them. So that made me think.
In person to the Pope.
That is my understanding. I think it was more than just I left them in a pile on his secretary's desk. You know, he's a person who would meet with the Pope. And so my understanding is that he was able to give them to him directly.
And have you heard anything?
Well, actually, just yesterday, we received a letter in our Awake mailbox from the Apostolic Nunciature. What is this? What is in this letter? I just knew because of that seal that something had come from the Vatican to the United States and was coming to me. And we opened that, and it was a letter from Pope Leo XIV to our community.
A personal letter from Pope Leo.
Yes, it was a real surprise. I had hoped that we could get the letters to him. And I had hoped that maybe he would respond, but that seemed like a long shot. I know the Pope probably gets thousands of letters every day. It was really beautiful.
So what was his response?
Well, I can read it to you here. This is what he sent. So it was addressed July 15th. So it took a while to make its way to us. And it says, Dear Mrs. Larson, I sincerely thank you for the letters you have shared with me. I acknowledge in them the voices and the pain of each person who wrote, and I express my deep closeness to each one of them. Be assured of my prayers. May the Lord grant comfort and peace to all those who have suffered and sustain those who are committed to making the church a safe place. Humbly, I entrust each of these stories to God, invoking his blessings upon them. And then it's signed in his own hand, Sincerely in Christ, Pope Leo XIV.
I can't even begin to imagine what your reaction was, Sarah.
It was astonished, surprised. Again, I'd hoped this might happen, but I wasn't really sure. And it was really heartening to me that he had taken the time. Now, I know that a single letter of a few sentences, it doesn't change everything. And there is much more that he can and should do as the Pope to work for transformation in the church. But this felt like a small sign of hope. And I am always looking for signs of hope.
What does this tell you, though, about him?
I hope that it means that he really is interested in listening to those who have been so deeply wounded in the church, and that he will be formed by their voices and the things that they are saying they need from the church. I take it as a really positive sign. I will also say, to be honest, church leaders for a long time have been very good at saying the right things and not always acting on it. And so some survivors in our community have been understandably skeptical. They want to see what actions he takes in his pontificate that will put into action the words he's saying here. So I do hold that reality that actions speak louder than words. But to me, it does feel significant that he took the time to write to us, and that if he truly read all those letters, I really have to believe they were so powerful. They were so beautiful. I really have to believe they will make an impression on him and will help form what he does going forward.
Coming up on WTMJ Conversations.
There is a lot of hope that we can grow more closely into the church that Jesus wants us to be, that is really ready to stand in solidarity with those who have been harmed.
Sarah Larson, the executive director and founder of Awake, shares a message to those who have been abused.
Now, more of WTMJ Conversations.
Welcome back. I'm Libby Collins. We're talking with Sarah Larson. She is the executive director and founder of Awake. So ultimately, what do you hope for Awake, and what do you hope for survivors?
My hope is that each person who has experienced abuse in the church feels heard, that their stories are honored and respected, that they are able to find justice to the extent that it's possible in this world, and that they will know, whether or not they choose to be Catholic, that there are many, many Catholics around the world who support them, that are willing to stand with them in their pain, and also to learn from their wisdom, their perspective, their stories, and accompany them on their journey. For the church, I hope that we can become who we are called to be. We are always a work in progress, and I'm very aware of that. But I really believe that there is a lot of hope that we can grow more closely into the church that Jesus wants us to be, that is really ready to stand in solidarity with those who have been harmed.
What message do you have for anyone who maybe has been holding this secret for years and years and years, that something happened to them and they've never come forward?
I want you to know that you are not alone. It was not your fault. It is not your shame to carry, and that you can reach out and there will be people who will receive your story, honor your experience, and seek to walk with you, whether that is through Awake or through another organization or support group or a therapist or just reaching out to a family member or friend. That it is hard to talk about these things, but I really believe, because I have seen healing come when these things that have been in darkness are brought into light and they're carried with loving, supportive people who can walk with you.
Sarah Larson from Awake, thank you for what you're doing.
Thanks so much for having me.
We've been talking with Sarah Larson. She is the executive director and founder of Awake, a Milwaukee-based organization representing survivors of clergy abuse throughout the United States. Now, if you joined us late and you want to hear our entire conversation with Sarah, go to WTMJ.com, where you'll also find a partial transcript courtesy of eCourt Reporters. For WTMJ Conversations, I'm Libby Collins.